there's a legitimate chance to have three players from the same high school team in the first round. It's very West Coast heavy this year, which is maybe a little bit different. People in California can get excited that there's a lot of talent there. There's a lot of talent in Texas.
What's up, everyone? It's Baseball America Hot Sheet, the weekly show covering everything you need to know on the prospect side. Of course, please subscribe to Baseball America, both online and this YouTube channel. If you're watching this video right now, it's Scotty Braun along with Baseball America's Ben Badler and Jeff Ponce. Happy winter meetings to you both, especially to you, Jeff. You're out there right now, right?
Just landed about an hour or two ago. Just got here into Dallas. Haven't even hit up the hotel for the winter meetings yet. Just checked in, kind of got ready for the show, and then I'm going to venture out there. One of my favorite trips that I get to take all year. It's usually pretty short, but a lot of stuff we get to get done in a couple of days.
Yeah, I love that. Get to see a lot of great faces and, of course, chat about the big topics going on in the sport. So let's actually hit the first move and go over the Soto ripple effect in the prospect world. All right, Ben, you can, of course, blend in your thoughts on the signing, but I also want to chat about where the Mets are at as a team, as an organization, and what was a helpful selling point in addition to a little bit of this, because the cash is what plays. But when they have a conversation with him and they go, here's where we're at from a farm system perspective, what do you see?
Yeah, I mean, if you're a Mets fan, obviously you got to, I think, be thrilled with today's or with the news of the Juan Soto signing. Overall, the farm system itself is, I think it's okay. I mean, they don't have one top 25 overall type prospect in baseball right now. I'm not even certain they have a top 50 prospect in baseball, but it's a solid top 10 overall. There's players from, say, probably number 3 through 12 or so, who I think you can argue in a bunch of different orders. So the gap in talent between those players is somewhat flat. But where I think they can continue, what they can continue to do, I think, is leverage both their willingness to spend in free agency, whether it's to go out and sign a, you know, a big name free agent, or maybe a totally different level of spending here, going after somebody like Oroki Sasaki. I think they're going to be very hard pushing in the mix to try to sign him. Obviously, his bonus is going to be capped, so it's only so much they can, you know, only so much Steve Cohen can do there with his resources. But I think they also have a bunch of interesting players who are in that farm system who could be pretty good trade chips too. Maybe not a blue chip prospect trade chip, but you know, there's nobody in that system who would be off limits in a trade, but they do have a lot of different interesting options where, you know, if they wanted to compete and go trade for somebody like a Garrett Crochet, there's probably other farms or other teams that have better farm systems, better players available to trade to beat them in that kind of a competition. But you know, if you're looking at replacing somebody, you know, if you're looking to replace like a Pete Alonso with somebody like a Josh Naylor from Cleveland, or not necessarily him, but a player of that caliber, what they have is a lot of different options within their farm system for other teams that will probably find something of value to be able to find the right match.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you look at this farm system and you hit the nail on the head. It's not one that has, you know, one sort of blue chip outstanding, you know, top 10 sort of prospect, but they do have pretty good balance. It's, you know, a fairly talented and young overall positional group. And then I think, you know, you look at a couple of the pitchers that they have there and guys like Brandon Sprout. Of course, the Christian Scott thing kind of came to a head this season, but was heading in the right direction. Nolan McLean. And you kind of see what they're doing on the pitching development side. It's a very talented top 10. I think, you know, they lack the high end, like Ben said. But, you know, 1 through 10, it's all prospects. It's all pretty good players. It's all players that I think, you know, are going to have average or better major league careers. And a few of those pieces, you know, potentially in a bigger deal, whether it's Crochet or somebody else that becomes available, I do think that they have the ability to do so. They have the ability to take on contract money from other teams as well. They're certainly not scared of that. I think this was very much a shot across the league saying, hey, like the Mets are here to spend, and they're trying to, you know, more or less become, to steal a soccer phrase, they're kind of becoming the Man City. I mean, it's like they're the noisy neighbors now, you know, that are outspending the perennial powerhouse in the Yankees. And it's such a funny juxtaposition from where we were 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago with those two teams.
big change happened about 5 or 6 years ago. It's called an ownership change, and it changed everything for Mets fans. They certainly love where they're at now. Obviously, they haven't gotten the title with the new ownership group, but this certainly helps. So Army chiming in here on the chat, maybe other teams have better prospects, but would Cohen be willing to give away more overall value in multiple prospects in a trade package? See, Jeff, I have a hard time seeing the Mets do much on the trade front right now because they've really worked hard to get to this point to be a maybe mid-tier kind of team right now with their farm system after not being in good shape for a bit of time. And their game plan for a while, and still is, can we be Dodgers East? What do the Dodgers do? They are able to develop homegrown players pretty consistently. Now, they've done a much better job, in my mind, than the Yankees have over the past decade or so. Obviously, the Yankees have had plenty of success. But if the Mets want to do that, they can spend to solve their problems with still plenty of payroll room in their minds versus having to swing a deal. So do you think that they would try to give up the prospects for someone like Garrett Crochet if they were looking for another pitcher to add to the mix? Or they just go buy a few more pitchers?
Yeah, I think they could certainly buy a few more pitchers. I do think that they're hitting a point where maybe there's some sort of additional pieces on this roster at this point, players that, you know, aren't necessarily going to see full-time roles, but other organizations, other major league teams, you know, potentially value them as everyday players, whether it's Brett Beatty and some of these other guys. You know, I think we're looking at like secondary pieces. I don't know if a Crochet deal is likely unless, you know, they're willing to do something like throw 9 prospects at it or something. And the White Sox look at it as, well, you know, we kind of need depth in this. We have a decent top 10, but outside of that, we're really, really shallow and haven't drafted well, if they're being that honest about it. You know, maybe. I still think there's better teams that are going to make bigger prospects available that are probably more attractive in a package for Crochet. But who's to say Mason Miller doesn't get moved? Who's to say that they don't go on into the market looking for a center field upgrade over Tyron Taylor? I know he was great in the playoffs and was a gritty player for them, but they're building the kind of lineup now where, you know, maybe that guy isn't sort of up to snuff in terms of what they're trying to put together here from a roster standpoint.
Actually, one name that comes to mind too, if they do dip into the trade market, who will cost a little bit less in prospects and a little bit more in money, but is totally in their wheelhouse, could be Jeffrey Springs. Heard his name in some reports and rumors. He's at like the $10.5 million range. But all right, let's move to the other team that was in the running here, that was really in the running at the top, right? It was between the two New York teams at the end, Ben. And Yankee fans are obviously picking up the pieces right now, trying to figure out what they're going to do at the major league level. But let's dip that all the way down to the minor league level as well. What should Yankee fans be excited about here going forward? And could the Mets organization have made the case to Soto, again, I know it was about money, that they were in better shape long term between payroll flexibility and what they had in their farm versus what the Yankees have?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Mets do have a better farm system right now than the Yankees. I think the Yankees will still, or they should still be, a playoff team next year. But without Soto, there's certainly some holes in that lineup. I don't love any of the position player free agents on the market who are going into their decline years. And then you look in their farm system and, you know, after Jason Dominguez, who's their number one prospect, I don't think it's particularly inspiring. I mean, I like George Lombard Jr., shortstop, who they drafted out of high school, their first round pick last year. But again, he was a high school first round pick last year. He's still going to be years away. Guys like Spencer Jones, Roderick Arias, these guys took steps in the wrong direction this year with major swing and miss risk. They've traded away some good homegrown players, guys like Kevin Alcantara, Augustin Ramirez to the Marlins. They trade Drew Thorpe, obviously, in the original deal to acquire Juan Soto. So it's not like they haven't been bringing talent into the system. But, you know, if you're looking at the farm system where it is right now, whether it's bringing up players to the major league club or looking for trade chips in the system, you know, if they're trying to make a trade, it's going to be a challenge for them to compete with better stocked farm system. You know, Jones's value is way down. Arias's value is down. I like Bryce Cunningham, the pitcher they drafted this year out of Vanderbilt this year. But after Jason Dominguez, I don't think there's a top 100 prospect in this system right now.
And I think you got to look at this lineup too and just say, like, you know, there's one great hitter in Judge, a pretty good hitter in Jazz Chisholm Jr. Austin Wells looked like he was kind of getting to that point where you could call him a definitively good hitter. I think Volpe, you know, there might be growth there, but still, I mean, you look at this lineup and it changes dramatically when you remove Juan Soto. Any lineup does. This one in particular, I think when you look at a really strong AL East and an AL East that I think a few of the teams that were down last year, like the Blue Jays, like the Rays, could be back up a little bit this year. The Red Sox taking a step forward, I think, is something that, you know, as I talk to folks throughout the game, they kind of predict this is going to be a pretty good team for a long time if they keep this core together and make a couple of moves. This is a really dangerous division, and I think that the Yankees now have sort of been pulled back to the fray. And that's an issue. I mean, you know, you got to the World Series, you weren't able to beat a great Dodgers team. You had to go back, you had to bring back Juan Soto. You have to bring in bigger names because, you know, as Ben rattled off, I mean, you have Jason Dominguez and then a lot of guys that underproduced and a couple of pitchers that you took from college and Hess and Cunningham who have upside. But, you know, then again, I think it's probably more, you know, a number four kind of starter. If things go really swimmingly, you're talking about a number three. Chase Hampton had a down year. Henry Lalanne, who we were very excited about coming into the year, had a down year. Roderick Arias had a really down year. And then, of course, Spencer Jones. In a lot of ways, his contact and skills at the plate just bottomed out. Matt Eddy had called it out the other day, but I think that Jones was in the top five in terms of in-zone swing and miss, was just a really rough statistic for a guy like him who doesn't chase a lot. So, you know, one of the things he needs to do is do damage in the zone consistently, and he's not doing that. So I think you look at this farm system right now, it could look very different in a year if these guys bounce back. There is talent in this system. But it's at a bad point. It was a bad 2024 in terms of injuries and production for their top names.
Just like a manager needs to plan to get that perfect matchup in the late innings of a game, you need to have a strategy to protect you and your family's future. That's why long before they ever sponsored the Baseball America podcast, I used SelectQuote when I needed to find life insurance. It was fast, it was easy, and it gave me peace of mind that I was getting the right policy at the best price possible. SelectQuote is one of America's leading insurance brokers with nearly 40 years of experience, helping over 2 million customers find over $700 billion of coverage since 1985. Other life insurance brokers offer impersonal, one-size-fits-all policies that may cost you more and cover you less, while SelectQuote's licensed insurance agents work for you to tailor a life insurance policy for your individual needs in as little as 15 minutes. You invest so much time to take care of yourself and to be the healthiest, best version of you. SelectQuote's exclusive policies can reward that effort. If you're in good health, they work for carriers to get you same-day coverage for up to $5 million with no medical exam required. And these policies are more affordable than you may think. You can get coverage for up to $1 million for as little as $20 per month. Head to SelectQuote.com and a licensed insurance agent will call you right away with the right policy for your life and your budget. SelectQuote. They shop, you save. Get the right insurance for you for less at selectquote.com/BA. Go to selectquote.com/BA today to get started. That's selectquote.com/BA.
All right, so then let's get to an org that Baseball America loves. Big announcement today. The Baseball America Organization of the Year is the San Diego Padres, and you can check out all of the work on socials from the Baseball America team, including the Padres being happy as an organization to get the award that we're looking at right here. And also on the main BA tweet said their creativity, resilience, and overall excellence makes them Baseball America's organization of the year. Jeff, what else can you add on why they were the choice?
Yeah, I think, you know, they do some things a little differently than other teams that are in their sort of market situation, because they're not a huge market, but I think you can give them credit over the last 5-6 years. They've done a great job of really growing that program, growing the enthusiasm throughout San Diego. Let's not forget, this is a location that lost an NFL team not too long ago. So it's, you know, this isn't a huge market. This isn't that different in terms, you know, of what they can do from a Pittsburgh or some of these other places. They've grown with enthusiasm. They've invested in the team. And they're a little bit more old school in the sense that they are a very heavy scouting organization. That is something that I think we all held in high regard, especially these days where it feels like you don't see teams that have a large pro scouting department the way the Padres do, but they consistently, you know, get returns on that investment in terms of the players that they bring in, the players that they trade away. They don't get burnt too often. And, you know, when they do make trades, it's something I know Preller has said directly, they trade good players. And I think that's one thing, is it's just the Padres every year seem to have a down farm system. And then we look at it in June and they have two high school guys and an international signee who break out. And I think that's, you know, that's credit to them and just what their process is, particularly in terms of identifying and then acquiring talent.
Yeah, I think they've done a lot of things well over the last couple of years. Obviously, they went for it and trying to, you know, in bringing in Juan Soto. And then his, you know, really his walk here, they pretty skillfully were able to get better while trading this superstar future Hall of Fame player. You know, they get back Michael King, who was a four war player. They get back Drew Thorpe, who they then flipped to the White Sox in a trade to acquire Dylan Cease, who's another four win starter. They send spare parts to the Marlins to get Luis Arraez. On the free agent market, they bring back Jurickson Profar. He has a career year. Probably got pretty lucky there. Like, I don't think they expected that kind of a season from Jurickson Profar, but a good signing nonetheless. And then you look at their homegrown talent, like, you know, like Jeff is saying, in addition to these trade trips, they bring up Jackson Merrill, who could be a rookie of the year winner in a lot of other years in a league where Paul Skenes doesn't exist, but a great draft pick in the back of the first round. They're one of the best teams in baseball in Latin America. Leo Dallas DeVry, who they signed this year. Ethan Salas, who they signed last year. You know, who's number one, who's number two? Take your pick. Debate that all you want. But those guys are both probably top 25 overall prospects in baseball right now. So when you look at a lot of the factors that go into this award, the Padres really grade out well in a lot of different facets.
Oh, congrats to the Padres organization. A lot of news, busy week, but this is a good one to obviously tip your cap to. And I love hearing the pro scouting side of things, whatever. Call anyone old school, but those are jobs. Those are valued jobs. There's something to someone being somewhere. And obviously, yeah, the international scouting approach has really worked well for them. So cheers to the Padres. Ben, thank you for joining us. Enjoy the rest of the winter meetings as you watch everything unfold. And we'll talk to you, I'm sure, next week.
Definitely. Thanks, guys.
Appreciate you. All right. So it's Jeff and me, and we are going to hit Helium Spot because there's a big little event going down on Tuesday. All right. We're going to bring Carlos Collazo in soon, but Jeff, we can talk about it first. The MLB draft lottery is happening tomorrow, Tuesday night. If you're catching this later on, maybe it's the day you're catching it now as we do this show live on a Monday. I'll bring up my favorite stat from last year. The Cleveland Guardians had a 2% chance at getting the number one overall pick. That kind of plays into why we're doing this. You don't just get to tank through a season and automatically get the top pick because you suck better than other teams. Mission accomplished when the Guardians had a 2% chance. Good for them. They're a small market team. They've worked hard. They've done a nice job. And you can't just reward the A's and White Sox for what they've done over several seasons. White Sox don't even get to participate in this draft lottery.
That's my favorite part. I like the fact that, you know, teams like that that are not investing in putting even a mediocre product, even a mid product on the field, are then penalized for going back into the draft lottery year after year. I think that, you know, that pushes people to be competitive, to invest a little bit more. And also, I think, you know, for a team that maybe has a down year like Cleveland, because they made the playoffs in 22, they made the playoffs in 24, made a nice little run, were a pretty good team all year long. They had a down year, some things went wrong. And then you kind of look back on that 2023 year, I'm sure in a few years, when Travis Bazan is starring as their second baseman, you know, they're going to look back on it and say, wow, that was, you know, that worked out in our favor. And certainly I think that, it's a good thing. It's a good thing not to just reward the tanking teams all the time.
Yeah. It was a format that happened for a long time. And look at Carlos sliding in too. Carlos Collazo here with us right now on Hot Sheet. You want to give us your big picture thoughts on the draft lottery coming up here?
Yeah, absolutely. What's up, guys? I agree with pretty much everything y'all are saying. I think maybe you could quibble with the fact that some of the big market teams are pushed out of the lottery a year before some of the teams that are bad and just choose not to spend money. I think for me, it would be nice if everyone was just limited to either 1 year in the lottery or 2 years in the lottery. But I agree. I think it adds a lot of intrigue. There are teams that have never picked number one overall who will have a chance to get this pick just by getting lucky, which I think just adds a little bit more excitement. Maybe for the teams who otherwise wouldn't be thinking about the draft at all at this point are in. I think we've done a lot of really good things to the draft in recent years just to make it more exciting, make it more fun. And for me, as someone who covers the draft, I obviously like it. I'm sure a lot of the teams who maybe would really like to be picking at the top after a terrible year don't love that, but it certainly adds some drama. It adds some excitement. And I think in terms of the 2025 draft that these teams are hoping to secure high picks for, it's a pretty solid class this year.
All right, so the Rockies and the Marlins have the best odds of taking the number one overall pick. Next up would be the Angels, which would be huge for them. But let's get to what they could be working with, Carlos. And what is that? What could this next class look like? You know, in terms of some individual names, but also the overall class. Like, will we have some top heaviness to it like we've had, you know, in some past seasons here? What was it, last year? No, not last year. The year before, I think, was one of those kind of clear cut, what, top five or six players that we knew were going to fall in that range?
Yeah, 2023, we had a very clear top five in a really historically talented draft. Last year, I think at this point for the 2024 draft class, a lot of scouts were talking about how weak it was relatively. And I think the high school class in particular was down. This year, I think we can say safely right now, as it stands, the class is ahead of the 2024 group that is helped by a high school class that has a lot of hitters in the first round that we feel pretty good about right now. There is not a clear-cut 1-1 Adley Rutschman type who separated himself from the class now, but I think there is a tier of five players that for most people is at the top of the board. We have Jace Laviolette, who's a college outfielder, who's just this massive athletic 6'5", 6'6", 230-pound left-handed hitter with Texas A&M, who's one of the best players in college baseball. He brings a lot of power, a lot of speed. He's going to be at the top of our board right now. On the high school side, you've got Ethan Holliday, who I'm sure everyone knows at this point. He is better than any high school hitter in last year's class at this stage. His power is tremendous. He's a different player than Jackson Holliday, but in terms of his draft stock currently, he's ahead of where Jackson Holliday was entering his draft year. You move further down the board, you've got some really intriguing pitchers on the college side in Tyler Bremner at UC Santa Barbara, at Jamie Arnold at Florida State. I think both of these pitchers are safer starting profiles at the top of the draft than anyone from last year's class at this time. Now, they don't have the sort of pure stuff that a Chase Burns or a Hagen Smith have and had at this time a year ago, but you can feel really confident that they are high caliber starters. And I think maybe the prospect who's the most exciting in terms of tool for tool and upside is Seth Hernandez. It's a risky demographic. It's high school right-handed pitcher. There are a lot of teams that just don't want to touch that demographic in the first round, period. But he is one of the best high school pitchers we've seen in at least a few years. He's been up to 98. He's highly athletic. He's got a 70 changeup. He's a two-way player who can also hit and play shortstop. So the top of the class is looking pretty good. And I think the depth overall is strong in most demographics this year.
Carlos, I was actually going to ask you a little bit to expand on the depth within the high school class, because, you know, when we were out here in Dallas the last time for the All-Star game, I'm back now. We saw some of those guys in the Home Run Derby, et cetera. Some of these guys obviously in big events all throughout the summer. Who are some of the other names to know besides Holliday and Hernandez, who are, you know, the top position player and top pitcher on the high school side in the draft?
Yeah, I think this class has a lot of high school shortstop talent, which is a demographic that everyone is obviously really excited about. It's a demographic that you want to have a lot of depth in any given draft class. Kaysen Cunningham was the MVP for Team USA this past summer. He maybe is the best pure hitter in the class. I don't know if Ben Badler would agree with this comp, but I think of a guy like Kevin McGonigal. He is shorter, he's smaller, but he's got a direct swing. He can really manipulate the barrel. He's playing shortstop right now. Some scouts might think he moves off to second base, but he might be the best pure hitter in the class. And then you look at a guy like Xavier Nyans, who's out of Washington. He's a third baseman, and he's also a pitcher. I think most scouts like him more as a hitter, but he's got tremendous power upside. He's got a really advanced understanding of the strike zone. There are some swing and miss questions, but there are probably going to be some scouts in the industry right now who put a guy like Xavier Nyans neck and neck with Ethan Holliday. I think from an upside and a tools perspective, he is right there. It's really impressive when he connects with the baseball. So really, I just think you have more profiles up the middle on the hitting side. Last year, we were really kind of looking around and wondering, where are the high school hitters in this class? There were guys with tools, but the guys with tools had a lot of hit risk. You've got guys like Kaysen Cunningham, Xavier Nyans, Eli Willits was a big riser this year, Brady Ebel at Corona, Billy Carlson, at Corona. that's three players from Corona High School. I think we've touched on the Hot Sheet show previously, but there's a legitimate chance to have three players from the same high school team in the first round. It's very West Coast heavy this year, which is maybe a little bit different. People in California can get excited that there's a lot of talent there. There's a lot of talent in Texas. So really, I'm just excited there. It was hard to get to 100 this year when we were ranking our top 100 draft list. Typically at this stage, it's kind of, you're trying to get to 100, but there were like 15 or 20 players that I wanted to squeeze in the list that I just didn't have room for.
Oh, that's a great problem. We love hearing that. So I also personally, back to the lottery for a second, just root for chaos. So I hope that we see some really weird top 10s that are unveiled here with the draft lottery. So Carlos, thanks for giving us a little preview of that. Also during the winter meetings, later in the winter meetings, really to wrap it up, we get the Rule 5 draft. The place to go to get you excited about it is Baseball America, of course. So the top players available, we've got the preview. They've got you covered. Go get yourself a subscription, okay? That's how you can learn more about it. Also, JJ wrote an article about changes. JJ with a little opinion piece on what he'd like to see differ about the process. So go check that out. JJ Cooper's article on baseballamerica.com. And then lastly, for everyone to take a look at is the continuation of the top 10 rankings that are being rolled out division by division, week by week. We're trying to tackle now the American League Central, all up there for you to check out. There we go. Calendar all updated for you as we have now reached December. Today is the 9th. That means we just learned about the Royals top 10 today. The Twins round out the AL Central, and then Baseball America moves to the American League West. So A's, Angels, Astros this week. We get into the Mariners and the Rangers after that. Next week, AL East is already there for you too. I know we were talking about the Yankees earlier. If you want to see their whole top 10, go for it. That is the top 10s on Baseball America's website. Get yourself a subscription. Please, thank you so much for watching this video and this show. Hot Sheet is here every week for you live. So if you're new to the party, don't just come for winter meetings. We're here to answer your questions too about specific prospects. We can do that again next week. Carlos and Jeff, thank you for the time. Jeff, have fun out there. Go get a cocktail and talk some ball with some friends, all right?